Matt, a duck goes to Boots.
Yeah.
And says, I'd like to buy some lipstick, please.
Right.
This is a talking duck, is it?
It's a talking duck. He says, I'd like to buy some lipstick.
Yeah.
And the bloke says, would you like to pay by cash or check? And he says, could you just stick it on my bill?
For fuck's sake.
Welcome to Lug Radio Season 2, Episode 21. I am slightly concerned because before I started recording this, everyone was shouting, come on, Matt! And that's not very pleasant, really, if you think about it.
I always held back.
Matthew Lovell, speaking here, live from a very sweaty and hot Wolverhampton. Who are you?
Abe Bolcher. I've just realised you're not ticklish. I just tried to tickle you during that, and you didn't laugh.
I'm more of a Buddhist than you, mate. Jono Bacon and Stuart Langley
Buddhist
here as
not
well.
Ticklish.
Hello, guys.
Hello.
Thank you. Should we just not bother speaking?
Just fucking, you know, talk amongst yourselves. Plus, I love the way Matt starts it off in his marketing voice as well. Hi, this is Matt Revel from Wolverhampton.
Do you know something? This is the fifth take we've done of this intro, and I just wanted to get it clear, right?
And he said that when he went to the gynecologist.
What do you want to talk about today, chaps?
Nothing. Well, he's not allowed to talk about it.
Okay, well, thanks for listening to the radio.
So, which two things are we not allowed to mention? Because we might offend someone in the community.
There's nothing we're not going to mention.
My skin's crawling. So anyway, the thing is, right, I want to talk to Sarah Ewan. Because she could make it to LRL, you know, let's call it that. So let's get her on the blower, have a chat to her about Sony PlayStation Linux.
Indeed.
Absolutely.
Yes, I'd like somebody to clear up G-Streamer thing for me, because I'm not sure I quite understand it.
It's streaming, so let's clear it up. Okay, let's
should we
speak to someone about that?
Let's speak to Edward Hervey from Pitavi.
Okay. Hervey.
And I want to talk about whether doing the right thing or having choice is more important.
Yes, so should we...
whether doing the right thing or having a choice, yeah?
Yeah, so you're choosing in between those two things.
Okay.
You've got the choice between those two things. Which is more important?
The choice.
Well, let's discuss it.
Should we, as they say in the south of France, let's crack on?
When do they say that? All the expats might say that.
No said
it. Ronnie Biggs and people like that.
Is that people who used to be called Pat?
Let's get on with it.
Jono.
Yeah.
You talk about G-Streamer quite a lot, and I'm not sure...
All the time, in fact.
Yeah.
I don't talk about it all the time.
Fluendo.
And I'm not quite sure I understand.
Oh, Fluendo. Oh, I love you, Fluendo. G-Streamer.
That's your mum.
Yeah, have you finished?
Fluendo language. That's my mum's name.
I've never... Redbeard, have you finished?
Sorry, carry on.
I'm never finished with his mum. Carry on.
Fluendo language. Ah, giving up.
Carry on. So, you were saying...
I've lost all will to live.
Aid, you're on Lug Radio. Come back. Aid, come back to the light. Come back to the light.
Right, G-Streamer.
Yes.
I'm not sure I understand G-Streamer. What is it? I know it's to do with video. Is the idea that you can write something that uses video and therefore, because there's a G-Streamer plugin, therefore...
Yeah, what is
from
it?
What I can tell, I mean,
what's G-Streamer's role?
I've got into it recently. From an observational standpoint. I've not really done much development with it. I've done a little bit. But what it is basically a multimedia framework where you can plug...
A framework. Excellent.
We love frameworks. where you can basically plug together different components that do something in particular. You know, like in the Unix where you string things together with pipes.
Yeah.
Yeah. With GStream, you've got a pipeline. So you could combine something that, for example, first of all, decodes an OGG file, and then maybe runs it through something else, and then maybe applies an effect.
So they're kind of like GStreamer plugins, so you might have an OGG plugin.
Yeah, it's kind of like Lego for multimedia.
But it's...
So then if you're going to write an application, you write an application that has GStreamer plugins, or what did you call them? Bindings.
You'd write an application that would make use of certain elements. So for example, if you had an application such as Totem, and that supports... Let's say for a second that supported some kind of audio effects.
Right.
You'd probably be able to search for all the effects plugins on your system, and then it would basically use the ones that are on your system.
So people would write an audio, an echo effect for GStreamer.
Yeah, although this is where I'm unsure, because I think people have written things like LADSPA plugins that can then be run in GStreamer.
Well,
I don't know this for sure.
The best way I can think of describing it, because I was... I did a bit of reading about it, so I didn't really understand it. Then I had this kind of epiphany. They talk about G-Streamer pipelines, and they are not kidding.
Did you come?
Not quite.
Right, okay.
It's not quite that exciting because I'm not Jono. Jono shoots his wad about GStreamer every day, as far as I can tell, but I don't.
I wonder what that is as I came
but
in.
If you, I'm not going to deny it.
But if you look at text processing with Python, so you've got all the little Unix commands that don't do very much, like tr, just changes some letters to other letters, and sed will do a few things, things.
Yeah.
GStreamer is very much like that. Each GStreamer plugin does one very simple thing. So you'd have one which knows how to take an OGG file and turn it into sort of raw audio, for example.
So is GStreamer the pipe?
GStreamer provides a framework on which these things can run.
Yeah, right.
Sort of. So GStreamer's like Bash.
Okay.
If you like. And each individual GStreamer plugin is like a little text processing thing. So you might have, in the same way that...
Think of the plugins like commands.
That TR can turn lowercase letters into uppercase letters, say. You might have a plugin which can take some incoming video and turn it into... incoming video with static over the top of it.
Okay.
So that's why you can have GStreamer you can have things like Totem, which is a video and an audio player that runs on GStreamer. You can have things like PTV, which is a video editing system which runs on top of GStreamer.
Yep.
So is this a bit like KDE Arts?
Arts.
Or is that something different?
It's a similar concept with Arts.
Did you just say Arts?
Arts. You might as well have. It's a similar kind of concept, but the benefit of GStream is the fact that, from what I can tell, is that they've basically got this plug-in way of doing things.
Yeah.
So it means that the guys who work on the GStreamer framework, the thing that the plugins sit in, they can concentrate on that, whereas third-party developers can go and write their own plugins, and they don't necessarily have to hack on the rest of it.
So here's the problem.
That was my general, like, understanding of it.
Yeah. So here's the problem, in my opinion, in that GStreamer sounds great, brilliant, wonderful, right? But there's this other thing called Zine, if you're a GNOME user. Where does that come into?
Zine's just a player.
But okay, but it supports certain formats, and GStreamer.
Yeah.
As a rather unsophisticated multimedia user of the GNOME desktop, you know, I'm looking at say for example playing a Lug Radio Live and Unreleased, right? The video of that, I can't watch that in Totem GStreamer. I've got it installed.
Why is that, Matthew?
And I don't know why that is. I just thought, well, I'll give that a go.
Part of the reason why people are moving more towards the GStreamer way of doing things. It's kind of, there's an analogy with HAL and the way they've done it.
Right.
Like with applications before HAL.
Close the pod bay doors?
No.
Right.
Okay. With applications before HAL, every time you accessed hardware, you had to basically manually write the code to do it yourself.
Yeah. You had to bash the metal.
So with HAL, you can obviously use HAL to access the hardware.
Right.
Now with GStreamer, before GStreamer, you had things such as MPlayer, MPG123.
Yeah.
An OGG player, whatever. You know, you've got all of these different applications to play single formats.
Yep.
So with GStreamer, the idea is that if an application uses GStreamer and the plugins are converted to GStreamer...
Isn't that what I asked about 10 minutes ago?
Right?
Didn't I just ask that about 10 minutes ago?
Yeah, but if you just come at it thinking, it's a video playing thing and there are plugins, then you don't get the idea of it.
It's basically a thing for GNOME people who are writing GNOME programs to say...
It's not just GNOME people, it's free desktop.
All right, so it's a thing for
Amarok
people who are writing stuff then to say, right, I want to be able to read an OGG file. I don't give a shit about coding all the crap. I'll just call GStreamer and that'll do it for me and give me the stuff back.
That's fairly accurate because one of the benefits of it...
So, for instance, Zine actually writes its own stuff inside.
Like with MPlayer as well. I mean, with MPlayer, every release of MPlayer, they write all of the code to deal with a codec.
Oh.
Whereas, I mean...
So it's a layer of abstraction, really.
It is, yeah. I mean, as an example, when I started playing around with GStreamer, I was playing around with the Python bindings.
Right.
And I wrote something that decoded a Vorbis file. And I didn't do anything to do with the codec. I just basically constructed a pipeline and fed a file into it. So you don't necessarily need to
You wrote the command that strung the two things together.
Yeah.
That's where the innovation lies a lot of the time, though.
Someone else did a load of work on some codecs and you strung them together.
But
you look at history, that's where the invention lies, though.
But that's the point. That's exactly how it should work. I shouldn't need to know.
So someone else has done 99.9% of all the work.
In the same way that you use a kernel and you don't write a kernel every time you want to use a computer.
Yeah. I mean, the key point about it is if you wanted to write an an MP3 player, a bit of software like XMRS.
Yeah.
You need to basically get a GStreamer thing where you've got an MP3 loader plugin, and that'll load an MP3 and output it in sort of raw audio or whatever. And then you just essentially pipe that raw audio into a thing which knows how to take raw audio and send it to the sound card. That's it.
Yeah.
An MP3 player is basically a pipeline of those two things.
Yeah.
Exactly the same way that you'd knock together a pipeline in Bash, and then you just bang a quick GUI shell around it. Bang! You've written XMMS in about 15 lines of Python, or about 30 lines of C, probably.
Okay. So why don't we talk to somebody who's using this technology?
So, I wanted to say that.
It's as if it's scripted.
I think. Who should we talk to?
Eduardo V.
Edward V.
Edward V.
Peter Bredman.
Hervey.
Edward
Hervey, who is the author of Peter V.
Hello?
Hi, Edward. You're live on Lug Radio.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Fine, you?
Not so bad. So what are you hacking on at the moment?
Right now, I'm in the middle of finishing the porting of GST Python to support the 0.9 version of GStreamer.
Right. And what kind of stuff is this technology going to allow PTV to do, essentially? I mean, what does GNonlin and what does GST Python do for us?
Where to start? GST Python is just Python bindings to use GStreamer. So the advantage is that writing it in Python, I mean, it's quick to write, it's quick to modify.
Yeah.
But we're also using, for PTV, we're using a set of elements which are made for non-linear editing.
Right.
Called GNonlin. It basically eases the work.
Right.
It's a bit hard to explain.
Cool. So, PTV is a video editing system for the GNOME desktop. Why do we need that on Linux?
Because there isn't really any editing tool right now. The few available, like Cinerara or Kino, are a bit hard to handle for the end user.
Right. Bollocks, basically.
We need something like...
Jono's description of that is bollocks.
Sorry?
Jono's description of that is bollocks.
Yeah. They're shit, aren't they? Let's not mince our words.
I'm not going to say that.
Okay.
But basically, we want something easier to use for Grandma, John Doe, whoever.
Okay.
We'll make John Doe, yeah.
Grandma, John Doe.
So just going back a little bit, I mean, you're talking about the Python bindings there. Didn't you initially write some of this in C and then decide to rewrite it in Python?
Yes, we started in C.
Could you just go through your reasons for that for me?
Sorry?
Could you just explain to me why?
Why we switched?
Yeah.
Well, in fact, I wanted to do it from the start in Python. But when I started, it was at school, so I was with a team of 8 other people, and they didn't know Python. So the common denominator at that time was C. So we did it in C and G object. But then 4 months ago, I had a look at the code, and it was a bit hard to go on further with the actual code base, so I decided to switch to Python.
PTV, is your plan for it that it'll be a video editing suite for ordinary people putting together their own DVDs, editing their holiday videos, that kind of thing? Or is it a tool for professional video editors, or is it both?
Well, I'm trying to aim it at both. At first I want to get something like iMovie, which is really simple. You drag your sources, something that you captured from your camera, put it in the order you want, put a soundtrack, and press export to DVD, and your DVD is ready. But at the same time, I'm trying to design it in such a way that you can, just to give an example, the front end, the user interface, and the actual processing is separated, so if ever some professional users need a different interface, it will be possible to actually make something more suited to them.
Oh. Okay, one other question there. Are you finding that
GStreamer itself provides everything you need for PTV, or are you driving some of the development of GStreamer to do things because PTV needs them?
Yeah.
Well, that's a very good question. What happened is that when we started developing it, it was GStreamer 0.8, and at that time, most of the applications using it were players or the FluMotion streaming server. Yeah. And so the big problem was that they were using static pipelines, whereas PTV, I mean, a non-linear editor has got a more intensive use of GStreamer.
Right.
So
in the past
year, we've managed to corner quite a few bugs and stuff that was missing from the API. And in fact, 0.9 is taking into account a few of those problems.
Yeah.
So it's really a different use, and it's in fact a big test application for GStreamer 2, in some sense.
And in terms of your work at Fluendo, obviously Fluendo are sponsoring a lot of the development behind PTV. What are Fluendo seeking to get out of this? What's the reason behind it? I mean, there must be a monetary reason for it.
Well, the monetary reason is that shortly, apart from the fact that it helps improve the quality of GStreamer and therefore FluMotion indirectly, we are going to release shortly some plugins for Windows Media Reel decoding.
Right.
And it'll be, I can't say too much about the details.
Okay.
Go on.
Go on. Go on, let us know. We won't tell.
For a small fee, you'll be able to have a professional Reel decoder, Windows Media decoder, and encoder.
Fantastic.
So, for example, you'll be able to encode in Reel Media or Windows Media. And we're hoping that people using PTV and who would like to export to those formats will buy those plugins.
So is the idea then from Fluendo to have an end-to-end video and audio system where you can put your stuff in, fiddle with it, and then shoot it out again over the internet?
Nice choice of words, Matt.
That too. That too. The G-nonline elements I was talking about earlier on, those were, how could I say, the central power of PTV. But they can also be used in various other systems, and I'm having a look at including them in FluMotion. So you can do playlists in FluMotion or real-time editing, where the output will be seen in FluMotion itself.
Okay.
Right. Just a quick question. Does PTV, is that French for small V? What does it mean?
The real reason of PTV was because I was in a video association for school, which was called EPTV, because the school is called Epitech, so the Epitech Television. And so we decided that PTV was an easy word to say in any language. So
it sounds cool.
And I mean, and it could also mean, like, powerful tool for video, for example.
That's a coincidence.
Yeah, backroom. a quick question. You've got PTV now is downloadable, but how far away is it from being ready for use, or is it ready for use now?
Well, there's a lot of improvements in 0.9 which are necessary for real video editing, so that's why I'm switching completely to 0.9. I'm hoping to have a stable enough release by end of August, beginning of September, something like that, which will be based on GStreamer 0.9.
Okay. Can we just get an idea of the size of the development team that you've got working on this at the moment?
Me, and me.
We're speaking.
Okay, thanks.
So, voilà.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much, Edward, for coming on the show, and obviously all the best in the future with PTV. I'm sure it's going to be fantastic.
Can't wait to see it,
yeah. And thanks for coming on the show, and I'm sure we can hook up for another 5-minute update in the future.
The way Linux used to work, the way the desktop and shit like that used to work, is that you could essentially take any one component and swap it out for other components. Yeah, you know, this is E1R,
allowed, and Linux desktops didn't fucking work properly.
Kabal kernel, all by myself. Fucking hell.
Right. And that was the point. The desktop didn't work all that well because everyone insisted that you couldn't depend on any one component other than X. Everything else you had to be able to say, no, but I want my application to work with the Athena widget set rather than GTK or
yes.
whatever. Yeah.
Yep.
So it never really took
they
off.
They just sell cards then.
Recent.
And posters.
This is where Matt chips in and goes, Athena, for those of you Americans who don't know, you just sell posters in the UK before you shut down.
Two words, cock and sucker.
Ah. But anyway, it's from my perspective, one of the reasons why the Linux desktop never really took off. Now you got GNOME and you've got KDE, but they're very much a kind of all or nothing approach. While you can theoretically take a GNOME application and run it on a KDE desktop because of the free desktop standards and so on.
Right.
And you can take a KDE application and run it on an XFCE desktop and so on. It makes a lot less sense to do so because, you know, you're a lot better off if you take GNOME and run it as GNOME. Because everything kind of ties together. You've got, you know, if you run the GNOME panel applets, they'll talk to GNOME applications, for example.
Right.
Now, the perception from my perception of that is that people are saying, yeah, okay, we're reducing your choice, your swappability of things, so you can only do it one way, but it's the right way. Okay. Now.
Right. Well, don't KDE though give you every option under the sun? To change things about.
Only not, if you run it under KDE.
Not really. You've got to have a KDE. Yeah. I mean, KDE applications will talk to one another with DCOP, say. And in KDE 4, they might talk to one another with DBAS. But they're still very much oriented towards you having KDE as a whole thing. Not swapping bits out.
Right.
I mean,
so
while
what
you can
saying,
theoretically
then?
Not use KWin, the KDE Window Manager, and use Window Maker instead, it makes a bit less sense to do so. Swappability, being able to do that, isn't a priority anymore like it
so
used
to be.
So
if I was to run a KDE application in GNOME, it would run, but it wouldn't necessarily communicate with the other programs.
Not necessarily quite as well, because people will say, well, yeah, you can do that, but it's not a major priority anymore. They do enough to make sure that it's possible and it doesn't break stuff, but the way it used to be, that was really, really important. Is it better to have this way where we sort of define the right thing and stick to it? And then say, well, if you want to diverge from that, you're going to have a slightly worse experience, but we'll give you the option of doing so. Or would we have been better sticking with the way we were?
Is there no standard?
Well, here's the thing.
You either to get your swappability, you either have to lose loads and loads of functionality or have lots of massive frameworks that are just pointless.
Yes.
So lots of frameworks or
You'd have to have lots. And you'd have a framework for one thing, a framework for another.
But
so, for example, you'd have a framework for audio.
I'm talking about maybe a desktop framework.
G-Streamer.
You can't just have a desktop framework.
For desktops, it's very
because you want to be able to swap bits of it out, and that would include the framework.
Right, okay.
unless you have everything plugged into one thing. But then that's the right way. If you want an application to run on your desktop properly, you have to have it plug into our framework.
But if you look at the way it's happened, where we've had things that have become dominant with these systems, they've become dominant due to people who voted with their feet. Or more accurately...
Sacrificing choice for usability.
More accurately, developers have voted with their feet. The reason why GNOME and...
That's a lot more the point. People haven't voted with their feet because they haven't got the option to do so anymore. But, because developers have voted with their feet and cut off choice for users.
People have voted with their feet in that they run GNOME, though.
But if people think, I want to run XFCE as my desktop with the ROX filer and the GNOME panel, they can do it, but they have a worse experience, therefore fewer people will choose to do it.
But the point is, what do you do? I mean, yeah, you could say, well, yes, developers should use this, and developers should use that, and we should make sure everything is always open, and anyone can do anything the way they want to do it. That's the problem partially with KDE.
You've still got that choice.
At the end of the day, you can make the decision yourself. The problem with KDE is that they're trying to make it everything for all people. Instead of, like, with GNOME and with XFCE and some of the other window managers and desktop environments, they make it so it meets a specific set of people, right?
Yeah.
Now, you can't make developers move over. You can't make them.
Jono at KDE.org, by the way.
You can't make developers choose a particular framework. People will choose something whether it's the right thing or not. I don't see any problem with people standardizing on technology. Yes, people who don't use that technology might miss out. In the same way that people who decide not to live in a house with electricity will miss out on the things that electricity gives you.
Yeah, you have to make compromises.
You've got
to.
It's a good analogy, but I can see your point, though.
The vast majority of ordinary users are not going to sit there and think, oh, I really wish I could use a Rocks filer with GNOME. They're just going to say, I want to write a Word document. They're not going to say, I want to open Office document. They're going to say that, and then they just want to use it.
I think you're right to be concerned. You're right to raise it.
Yeah, I'm not saying that it's wrong to raise it, but what I'm saying is that, you know, if you've got... To get to the situation we've got, the swappability, I do think you'd have to have a massive amount of compromise on the functionality of what we've got now. You'd have to lose lots of things, or like I say, spend so long building bloody frameworks.
You'd have to match the lowest common denominator for every
all
framework.
The time. And I think that's what the rest of them took off. I mean, I would be clear about this. I agree with you.
Yeah.
You know,
this is still a radio controversial minute, isn't it?
I very much think
except
that
we're all in agreement.
I think we should be saying this is the right way to go, and personally, I think the right way to go is the way GNOME are doing it, which is why I use GNOME. The thing that worries me is not even that users get disenfranchised. Like you say, users don't give a shit. They just want to fucking do a document.
Yeah.
And it would be nice if they could take a thing off their document and drag it and drop it on a different application and it works.
Well, that'd be lovely.
You know, that'd be great.
Yeah.
And if you have to have a bit
or
of compromise so you can't do that with every application, then you can't, you know. What worries me a tiny bit, and this is where I get on my mono hobby horse again, is...
Is that a horse with one leg?
Is that it disenfranchised?
How does that work?
It is his hobby.
What?
A mono hobby horse.
Why would I only have one leg?
Because it's mono.
Oh, shut up, fuck off.
Carry on.
Shut up, right. Is not that it leaves users a bit out in the cold, but it leaves developers who aren't core developers a bit out in the cold. Novell, as an example, if they say, right, we're going to do... this major new thing, and it's going to be cool, but we'll do it in mono. And then a developer thinks, I'd like to plug into things. They're kind of obliged to buy into the mono deal, even if they don't want to, because they want to use that core part of the GNOME framework.
And there's something that Jono said earlier, which is you can't make developers go to one platform or another, but you can by creating a
hegemony.
One of those.
Oh, what?
Through money. Basically, where you've got...
Set a special kind of hedge.
Is that Germany?
It's a hedge for money.
It's almost like an empire through consensus. We've got one leading power. So Novell could pay enough developers...
Homogeny.
No. The word is hegemony, but it is homogenous in that sense. Yeah, like Maz, if Red Hat...
It's got a gold
homosexual.
No, that's milk.
I mean, Microsoft, as an example, could...
That's a monopoly.
Could seriously change the direction of the Linux platform by paying a shitload of developers to develop good stuff for Linux in one particular direction. So they could materially improve GNOME... in one particular direction. That might not be the way that you want it to go, but other people go, we don't agree with that, and they go, well, then write your own code. But they haven't got enough guys to compete.
Right. Yeah.
How much responsibility do you need to take for the wider scheme of things if you're a major core developer? Red Hat are a case in point. If you don't like Python, then Red Hat are really kind of knocking you out a bit because they're doing a lot of their stuff in Python. So if you think, I don't like Python because of X, that puts you shit out of luck if you want to be a Red Hat user.
Interestingly enough, though, Red Hat are also kind of acting as the foil against Mono because they say they'll never include it in their distro.
Yes.
So, you know, if you've got a couple of big players, then or two or three, then hopefully there will be some balance. But I can see the problem.
Yeah.
Because
But where has this happened, though? I mean, where has a software technology that's been driven by a single vendor really dominated the industry?
.NET.
It hasn't. I'm talking about open source. I understand. in the
fucking great big neon sign says .NET.
In the proprietary world, you've got a lot more
control.
Which
is most of the world.
You've got a lot more control because
for now, with
the open source way of doing things, you basically need to persuade a community.
Not if you use your financial power to create a whole set of software and tools that gradually creep into play.
So give me an example of an
open source. There hasn't been anyone there who has had the money until now.
I don't believe you.
GTK is a good example.
In what way?
Because most of the major players
are concentrating on GNOME. Therefore, they're pushing the GTK widget set. Therefore, GTK increases at a faster rate than other widget sets. Therefore, if you don't want to use GTK for some reason, you have to use an inferior widget set, and you have no choice about that.
So, Qt is an inferior widget set? Swing is an inferior widget
Swing
set.
Swing is an inferior widget set. But there you go. I mean,
how is GTK driven by a single vendor?
It's not, but it's driven by major players at the expense of little guys.
Half of the reason why GTK has become so popular is because it's driven by a lot of little guys as well. Yeah, you've got people such as VMware using it. You've got people such as Red Hat and Novella using
it. I hardly call VMware little guys.
No, I'm not. I'm giving examples of bigger guys, right? You've got bigger guys using it, right? But you've also got loads of small applications written by people in their free software. In their free time, rather. You know, people doing all of this in their spare time. That's the reason why GTK is taken off.
But I don't think those people are hacking on GTK.
No,
and that's the point. Those people are quite reasonably taking the decision to use GTK because it is a better widget set. The point is that the major players have the resources to commit to making it a better widget set, which means if you want to use a different widget set, like Athena or XT or Fox or anything like that, Swing, for example, you'll find you have an inferior product. But now, I'm not necessarily saying this is a bad thing. This is important.
So what's the issue then?
It's not necessarily bad.
If it's not necessarily bad, what's the issue?
The big players with big money get to control the direction the Linux desktop goes in, even if the community don't want them to, because they can afford to pay enough guys to work
the
with,
community can
and we
with
can't
feet,
compete.
But at the end of the day...
Go to what, though?
Some of the other inferior widget sets.
But why would you go? Why would you go to an inferior?
The community have no reason to go because they'll get an inferior user experience.
But it's a taller than Ronnie Corbett competition, isn't it? I mean, basically, why go to an inferior one if you don't need to? You know, and most people won't act.
Maybe your principles might drive it that way.
I was about to say most people won't act out of principle. Yeah. The majority of people won't. Most people would like, I imagine, a lot of people would like to drive a car powered on fairy dust, but they're forced to drive one powered on diesel
or petrol.
A car
powered on water would be a better example.
Yeah, definitely.
You could refuse to drive a car because you don't agree with the oil companies and GM and whatnot.
And some people do, but they have no influence.
The thing is, as well, is just because...
But you can't push water-powered cars because you haven't got the money.
Yeah.
And the people who have got the money don't want to push water-powered cars.
Are stifling the
development. So there are no water-powered cars.
But just because there's these large organisations pushing these technologies, they've picked on a particular technology and they're choosing to invest in it.
They've got to choose one,
right?
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily mean that that's a bad thing.
No,
that's
not
a good
at all.
Thing. And the thing is, you see, it's one of these things where...
Here comes the John O. Wisdom.
It seems to me that there's a lot of people in the Linux community will say, well, what if we could do it this way? What if everything could just work this way? You know, and you can think about that and we can discuss it and we can debate it and that's what we're here for. But at the end of the day, it doesn't happen that way. At the end of the day, yes, we know, it's not just the IT industry. Every industry is dominated by big players. And we're never going to get away from that because that's just the way things work. People can vote with their feet with open source a lot more than they can vote in other areas.
Okay.
But I think a lot of it is just the fact that the better technology wins through. And we can't...
But to some extent, four or five big organisations at the top get to decide what the better technology is by pouring their money into that.
But then they make
it.
But then they make it the better technology. That's the point I'm making. Qt. Look at Qt.
And it
as
remains
an
open, doesn't it?
Why did Mateus choose Qt when he wrote KDE?
Because it was the best widget set, right?
He chose technical capability over licensing, and he readily admits to that. Okay.
Yeah.
Now a lot of us disagree with that. Okay. But the fact is that I think part of the reason why GTK has become so popular is the fact that it is seen as the free software toolkit. In the same way that Xorg is seen as the free software graphics rendering server system, okay? You know, these are...
I'm not sure the Xorg people would agree with you describing Xorg as that, but I know exactly what you mean.
But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just because they're the poster boy technologies for those particular things, in the same way that Cairo, you know, in terms of doing sort of vector graphics and high quality scalable graphics, Cairo has become the thing. Why has this happened? Partially is because there isn't really anything else that will do it. When GTK came out, there wasn't really anything else that was to that kind of quality in the open source world that could do it.
I suppose if people scattered their efforts, then you wouldn't get such one technology that's so good.
Which basically circles us all the way back to my original question.
Yeah.
Which was that if everyone scatters their efforts, then you've got all that choice and all that excitement. you know.
Yeah.
But you haven't, but you've not decided on what the right thing is.
Yeah.
You're not saying we're going to go this way because we've all decided that's the best thing to do. And I think, I think we'd agree. I mean.
And surely if you have one or two technologies which are there to do certain, one particular purpose, then that makes it easier for everyone to get on board and to use those and interoperate with each other, doesn't it?
At which point, essentially, we're saying that it's not better to allow people to plug in whatever they want and exchange any bit they want. It's better to pick a few ways which are the right way and then get everyone to cooperate on that.
And like we said before, but, though...
As Jono said, I mean, if you get enough people putting the effort in, surely it will become the right way.
I mean, I kind of agree with you in the sense of... I'm not going to deny the fact that you... The Linux community is relying on the fact that people such as Nat Friedman and Miguel de Caza, they are forerunners in terms of the Linux desktop, right? They work in a large organization developing desktop technologies.
Yeah.
And a lot of it does rely on the fact that they buy into certain technologies. You know, this community is driven by very people up at the forefront, and it relies on those people. Like, you know, look at HAL. You know, if it wasn't for Habit Pennington writing the document saying why we needed HAL, people wouldn't, David Zuthen wouldn't have bought into it and written the software. So it relies on these people having the ideas and then everybody else buying into it. And a lot of that, in many ways, is going to be, you know, commercially driven. Okay, she couldn't make it to Lug Radio Live and she feels pretty rotten about it. So let's talk to Sarah Ewan from Sony about Linux on the PlayStation.
Hello.
Hi, Sarah. You're on Lug Radio.
Hi, Sarah.
Hello. Hi, everyone.
How are you doing?
Not too bad, thanks. How are you all?
Not bad. Are you having a good night?
Yeah, so far. Although I've been sitting around waiting for you lot's phone.
Sorry. You know, this is not the first lady who's been waiting around for us to call, to be honest. So, okay, so let's get started. I mean, explain what do you do at Sony?
I have a slightly schizophrenic job. it's two-sided because I no longer completely do what I originally joined to do. I do a bit of VS2 Linux, all matters related to anything to do with running Linux on your PlayStation 2.
Right, okay.
Which is still a part of my job. And these days I'm also involved in the infrastructure that supports all our developer support systems. PlayStation platform developers who've got questions and need support and want to get hold of our tool chain or what have you. We have a whole suite of open source tools that we use to support
that's
the flip side of my job. Before we go any further, I want to humbly apologise for standing you up the other weekend.
Don't worry about it.
That's fine.
It's been weighing on my mind, and I don't like standing people up.
Yeah, you know how we said we were sorry for making you sit about and wait for us to call?
I had a sneaky feeling.
A slightly serious question. Do try not to take offence, but I would say it is the general perception of me and most other people in the Linux community that Sony are, in general, not the most open company. In the Sony stuff tends to play its own formats and not everybody else's, as an example. If you look at A-Track and things like that, and you tend to have proprietary drivers for MP3 players and so on. And yet... you do Linux on the PlayStation 2. That's amazing.
And 3.
Three. What made that come about? Was it always a planned thing, or did you just think, hey, here's a way of reaching out to the community, or is there some underlying drive for it, or what?
Well, the more you know, the less surprising it gets. Linux has a long history of having been used behind the scenes at Sony Computer Entertainment. Right back to the very beginning of PlayStation development, Linux has always been an integral part of professional development. Our dev kits and our tool chain have always been supplied to developers for a Linux operating system. But from a consumer side, it is kind of surprising because it's not something that we've really been heavily involved in, and I can understand where your comments earlier came from about compatibility with certain devices and certain formats. With the PlayStation development, there's always been a bit of an effort to try and open it up to people at home. But it hasn't been easy from a competitive point of view and sort of all this stuff that comes around with the company being the way it is. For PS1, they didn't do anything Linux-based, but they did let people write their own code for it. They came
out Eurosie, wasn't it?
Eurosie, that's the one, yeah. It was extraordinarily expensive, and you had to you had to sign. I think you had to sign an NDA as well. You don't. I don't think you officially owned it.
But at least you didn't.
You just kind of it arrived at your door one day, and you got to use it.
And the games, that people created on it were pretty shit, weren't they?
Well,
let's be honest.
They varied. They got to the point where we started including them on cover discs. There was always a little net erosion section on the PS1 demo disc.
It seemed to be like, you know, there's a bouncing ball and you've got to tip the screen to basically make the ball roll somewhere.
They got a lot better than that. There's a lot of people in the industry today who started out using those things.
Yeah.
And that was how they got into becoming professional PlayStation developers. So they had their place.
So in terms of obviously your experience internally at Sony, is there much Linux adoption internally?
It varies mildly. The answer has to be in Japan. It's all over the place. Here, not so much.
Right.
In Japan, I mean, you can walk around the R&D department in Japan, and you literally won't see proprietary software running box anywhere.
Fantastic.
For miles. There's Linux boxes everywhere, and they're used for development as desktops. It's where, you know, the heart and soul of R&D is, and because we tend to, the initial development always comes out on the Linux platform first, that's just the nature of the company, and there's a lot of advocacy for Linux. And, you know, even developing Linux for the PS2, it was an advantage to us internally to have a Linux kernel that boots and runs on the PS2.
So, let me get this straight. Are you saying that the PS2 stuff is developed on Linux boxes or just on open source tools?
Well, it depends how you want to phrase it. The actual PlayStation 2 dev kit has two boards inside it. One of them is obviously the PS2 board for running your code, and the other one is a PC board, which runs Linux in order to manage the device. But, yeah, the PC that you'd actually compile your code on, we provide a modified version of GCC, and that's the tool chain that provide when we ship out the dev kits to professional developers.
Fantastic.
Cool. You know, it looks to me as though Sony, big, massive corporation, Linux, all free. Isn't this just a cheap way of Sony getting control of the home living room and everything like that, and having a multimedia device in the living room on the
cheap?
Such
a cynic.
That's entirely true. I mean, the Linux for PS2, the product, has not been profitable for us. The profit for us is
long-term.
People getting the chance to learn about the architecture of the PS2 before they get into the industry.
That
was a vested interest for us. It was also a response to demand. Admittedly, there was a huge petition asking us to come out with a version of Linux that boots on the PS2. And we did release a product in Japan called the Broadband Navigator, which the initial version of that also booted on a Linux kernel in the background, although it wasn't obvious to the user. So we did come out with one product, which was Linux-based.
So what this broadband thing, what is it?
The Broadband Navigator?
Yeah,
it's called the internet.
It was only ever released in Japan. It's like a... It makes your PS2 more of a home media player, and you can download content over the net, because broadbands are probably there. So with the advantage of high-speed broadband, you can download film clips and movies, music, new games, small games, demos, all kinds of content, and your PS2 will play all back for you.
Cool. A brief question. PS2 Linux is now sold out in the US.
UK.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
UK or US?
In the US.
Oh, yes.
And I was reading about it, and it says you can't take a European DVD and put it in your US PS2 because it's region encoded.
Yeah.
Why?
Because the PlayStation 2 disc format, region encoding is an integral part of the format.
But couldn't you just do it as a region zero DVD? I don't understand why you'd want the European ones and the American ones to be incompatible.
It's not quite the same as DVD region encoding.
Isn't it? Oh, well, okay.
And the IOP, which is the IO processor in the PS2, by its very nature, looks at the format of the disc, and if it's the PS2 format, it spits it out.
So they're inherently different things?
It's not really in Linux's hands. There's a difference between DVD format and the PS2 format.
Okay, moving on to the PS3 then.
Yeah.
It's going to come with Linux if you buy the hard disk, is that right?
Well, we've certainly heard quotes along those lines. I can't tell you a damn thing for sure.
Okay.
but I've read the same stuff that you have, and there's talk of the possibility of having a full Linux operating system on there. But, you know, there's talk of all kinds of stuff, and right now...
What about the PSP, Sarah?
Sorry?
What about the PSP? What's that going to have on it?
PSP comes with a Visual Shell that you get with it, which changes colour every month. And I'm not sure there's a whole lot to do with Linux on there, to be honest.
Right, okay.
We have had lots of interest in being able to do amateur development on it, or being able to boot Linux, and I can see the attraction, because you've got the memory stick reader and Wi-Fi and USB, and there's just all kinds of potential expansion, but I haven't heard anything underground or overground about what you might be able to do with it, I'm afraid.
Right, and in terms of... I'm sorry about this. I just, you said underground, overground, and I just whispered to my friend, wombling free, which has just tickled us all, sorry. Anyway, shut up. They're all pissing themselves. Quick question for you in terms of, this is not so much specifically related to Linux, but in terms of actual games development and people getting into the games industry, you know, I mean, when I was younger, I wanted to develop games, like a lot of other fairly sad individuals who have actually now become really cool people in the games industry.
Everyone has a go at writing Tetris in some form or another.
Exactly, yeah. And in terms, you know, like the Sony dev kits, like these massive machines that people use to actually properly develop the games.
The T10Ks and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, what does somebody need to do? I mean, what kind of size business, what kind of size organisation does somebody need to do to be competitive in the games industry? Do you need to be a massive studio? Or could a bunch of talented hackers basically group together, pool their savings and develop a game?
You don't have to be a massive studio. There are plenty of examples of small independent companies and studios that are making their way in the games industry. There's even some great examples of a company I forget the name of who I saw recently, Imperial College. We're doing just that, doing it on their own, literally ordering the CD runs and packaging them up in their front room and posting them out.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, they'd have to be paying some kind of fee to Sony for that, though.
That wasn't a PS2 game. That was a PC game, I believe. You have to get yourself signed up with a publisher if you don't have all the money yourself. That's the sticking point. But you don't need a huge number of dev kits. It depends on your approach. So if you're willing to shell out for one, that'll get you somewhere, and it might get you enough of a demo that someone will buy into your idea.
Oh, nice one. That's cool. Earlier, I put a question about basically Sony looking to take over the home living room, you know, as a media device. And, I mean, I did put it in a rather kind of, you know, controversial way, but I mean, really...
Condescending way.
No, not at all. But, I mean,
adversarial.
I am adversarial, that's the way. That's the thing, just to get an interesting answer. But, I mean, the question remains, I mean, what... I mean, with the everything I've read about the cell processor and everything, it does seem as though the PlayStation 3 is going to be more of a multi-purpose device. So surely Linux would be fantastic for that, because then what you can do is people are, you know, maybe using it as a PVR or whatever, but they could also start using it as some kind of a home computer with maybe application service provision sort of model. Does that sound realistic or not?
It's certainly possible. To a certain extent, those things are true on the PS2. You know, it was always built to be expandable, not upgradable, and it had, you know, the USB port on it, the FireWire port at the beginning, and, you know, those kind of things could be used for the network adapter that was built in. So, you know, the potential is always there. I can't say I'm not a spokesman for Sony in that kind of way, and I haven't got a clue which way they'll take it, or, you know, what deal will be made first where. But there's a whole universe of possibilities out there. I'm sort of watching with as much interest as you are, to be honest.
Hang on, you're not telling us because you're not allowed to, you're not telling us because you don't know.
I don't know.
Right, okay.
Do we believe her? Do we believe her?
If you did know, would you lie about it?
That's a harsh question.
serious question. In as much as Linux on the PS2 was an experiment for Sony, was it a successful one?
Well, if they're putting Linux on the PS3, then...
I mean, it sold out so quickly in Japan and North America, and it was so popular here, that I think you have to say it was a success. Internally, I think it took a few knocks because there were some projects which tried to be Linux-based and had a hard time of it, and I think that as a result, it wasn't the fact that they were based on Linux, but other project management and other problems probably made things difficult. And so I think that probably held things up from that side of things. But Linux for PS2 has been enormously successful. Go on to PlayStation2Linux.com and look at the number of people who've registered.
Yeah.
And
what was that?
Forum
PlayStation?
PlayStation2Linux.com.
Right.
Yeah, there's a dash in there somewhere.
We'll find it. Google's out working.
We based that website on SourceForge explicitly to try and be reminiscent of the fact that you can have your own project space, get on the forums and upload stuff you've written as well as see what else everyone else is doing.
It must it must be interesting from your perspective because you're kind of the official face of Sony for a lot of the Linux sort of the hackers from the community. Do you find, there's been kind of a rebirth of hardware hacking in the last couple of years, you know, people hacking the Nintendo DS. In fact, one of the guys who hacked the Nintendo DS came to Lug Radio Live.
Yeah.
I wrote an article about it and interviewed the guy, and he showed up with it, and I was absolutely astonished to see it in the flesh, you know.
Yeah,
so do you find a lot of hardware hackers getting involved with it as well? I mean, are people trying to do weirdo hardware tricks with it, or is it just software people?
They don't spend as much time talking to me, probably, but I've seen people hacking in extra IDE cables so that they can plug in extra CD drives and hard drives and stuff.
Right, yeah.
There's no way I can advocate that because it voids your warranty instantaneously.
Absolutely.
But, there's always people taking things apart to find out how it works, and I don't think you can really stop them. I'm not sure how much of that involves running Linux on it at the end of the day. Probably a mix of the two.
Okay. Just as one final question, Sarah. As a woman in the games world, have you found it difficult at Sony? Is it difficult to be a woman in the games world? Or I'm just wondering why there aren't more women involved in the games world, in IT in general. Are Sony supportive, or...?
I have to say I've never found it an issue, but then I've never really found being a Linux user and being female an issue either.
Right.
And I think it's...
Good.
It's just my situation. It's not really a problem.
So it's always been the norm for you.
Very fortunate, never really encountered any resistance or any problems or any stories.
Cool.
I don't think that's true for everyone. I've certainly heard stories to the contrary. Those are probably unfortunate biased people who are out there in all kinds of areas. It's cool, and I guess I'm used to it from days back at Imperial when pretty much the norm.
Okay. Obviously, if you look at how the community have reacted to you, generally you're perceived as being very good, and Sony have got a reasonable amount of kudos from having Linux on the PlayStation. How have you found interacting with the community in the other direction? Have people been helpful, or have people just essentially took the piss wherever they could and, you know, tried to get around the restrictions
Ask
you put on,
questions.
Or what?
God forbid.
It's your usual spread, to be honest. We've got a handful of core users who are on the forums every day, making my life just wonderful. They come on and answer all the questions, and they pretty much run the site these days. They're obviously enthusiastic about the product, and they love it, and they use it, and that's what they're into. And then you get people who come on and say, I thought Linux was free. How come I have to pay for Linux on PS2? And, I put it in, and what do I type now? And everyone from newbies to frustrated people who just want to vent at Sony because the laptop just broke and forum. And, just your usual spread. I found it, maybe I wasn't prepared for it or really expecting it. Yeah. I went along to my first Linux user group meeting, having joined Sony to... Oh, no, this wasn't my first Linux user group meeting.
Right.
It was the first one where I joined Sony and I was
in an official...
working on this new project.
Yeah.
And I spent pretty much 90% of the evening getting all these stories from people about how Linux doesn't work properly on their bio.
Was nice.
How can you tweak your kernel to make the job dial work and get your PVC in a card configured?
Smooth talking bastards.
Completely and utterly unable to help them. But, there's an element of that everywhere. So
Not the best of chat blinds,
no.
Really.
No, you get used to it.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah, for coming on the show. You've been a very entertaining guest.
Tonight.
One last question. Did you want to ask something, Matt?
No, thanks.
Matt doesn't want to ask
anything? No, I'm fine.
He's looking like he wants to ask something.
No, I wanted to wrap up, that's all.
You want to wrap up?
Yeah.
Just before you wrap up, can I say one thing?
Yeah, go for it.
Sarah, are you going to come to Lug Radio Live next year?
Yes, I will.
You're not going to give us some feeble excuse, though.
Some feeble excuse about
You're
my passport.
You're on the other side of the world. some lie about your passport.
I'll be there with bells on.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, and I'll pass you over to Matt. One second.
Okay.
It all seems rather pointless now, but for me wrapping up. But thank you, thank you very much for joining us. We'd love it if you could keep us updated on all the exciting things that are happening with Sony's world domination plan. And no, seriously, thank you very much, and look forward to speaking to you again another time, maybe.
Bye, Sarah.
No,
cheers, then, Sarah.
Cheers.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Filthy gamble. Filthy.
Right.
What would you do for money? How much?
This is a brand new segment called Filthy Gamble.
How long will this segment last?
Probably 1 week. Now, it might even not last to the end of this recording.
I am quite sure you have played this game before, but you didn't know its name.
Yes.
And its name...
Yeah. It is now Filthy Gamble.
Its name is Filthy
Explain
Gamble.
Explain the rules.
Right. The way it works is we think of some suitably horrific incident.
Or they can think of it.
Or they can think of it. Send in your horrific incidents.
Indeedy.
And we've basically got to say how much we'd be paid to do it. Okay,
yeah, we've got to tell them.
Do you want some examples?
Go for
it.
Yeah,
okay. Right, one is, for example, eating a baby.
Right.
Okay.
How much money would you have to...
I'm not going to say.
Okay.
One would be receiving rectal pleasure from Dr. Fox from the chart show.
But neither of which
but
are
open source
related.
I think
there
would be something slightly more related
to open source.
Open source.
So let's kick off with how much money would it take for you to go to Microsoft? For example,
how much money would it take?
I've got one.
How much money would it take?
Go and work a box. Not go there. You know, steal some computers, load them.
I've got one for
that.
No, we've just done one, and we're going to do that.
It's related.
Go on then.
How much would Microsoft have to pay you to become a mono developer?
Filthy gamble.
Come on.
Hang on. Microsoft don't pay anyone to be a mono developer.
All right. You know what? .NET.
To be a .NET developer, which is different from being a mono.
Yes. Breathe and shit .NET.
No, a mono developer on Linux, I think, because I think that would be more interesting.
No, so you do that for nothing.
How much would I have to be paid
to just go and work on .NET?
It's more subversive if it was mono.
At the Reading campus.
It's in Reading, is it?
Their office.
Hang on. How much is this?
No, that's the Reading campus.
No dodging the question.
That's the one where they put the marks on people who can read. We're talking about entirely foregoing open source. I wouldn't do it.
Full stop.
I really don't.
£1 million a year.
You see, I remember a lug minute.
You could work there for a year, right?
This is the problem. Yeah,
you could work there for a year.
I'd probably do that if they were going to pay me
five million
a year. I'd go there and work for a year.
What'd you do it for one then?
And then quit. Is a million enough to retire?
It's a lot of money.
Possibly not, but it's enough to keep going for a bit.
I think if I had enough to retire, and I could do that on $1 million, because I could stick it in the bank and get $100,000 a year without trying.
Can I challenge your viewpoint?
I'd do it for a year, but that to me sounds like cheating, because I'm not really forswearing my ideas
for money.
You have
to do it for a year.
I'm just gritting me teeth for a year, getting it over and done with, and then getting off.
Yeah, what you were doing was directly damaging open source.
Then I wouldn't do it. I really don't think.
But what if
I'd
it was like
it.
That film that we were watching the other night? bloke goes over to
that
Tim
film
Robbins
where
place.
That bloke
Antitrust.
What if it was like that? He didn't know that Nerve was evil. He just didn't know. And then,
watching Antitrust the other night? I've never seen it.
You've not seen Antitrust?
No. I've seen it.
Miguel de Cars is in it.
Yeah.
Really?
No way. Which one's he?
Fifth of a second.
Is he playing Miguel de Cars?
Yes.
Is he?
In a way, what he's doing is...
Oh, he's playing Moggle de Incarna or something, and he's quite clearly Miguel de Icarza. Moggle de Incarna.
Right, back to the point.
No, not back to the point. He's handing an award to the main character for a fifth of a second.
It's all about the open source.
But he was in a film, that's really cool.
Yeah, and he was on Log Radio.
So you would do it for $1 million for 1 year.
But then that doesn't seem to me like I'm actually making that much of a sacrifice.
Oh, okay. Would you do it for 100,000?
No, because
see, therefore it's a sacrifice.
I remember Axe saying to me once when we played Filthy Gamble at a lug meeting, we're talking about how much would you be paid to sell heroin to children. And Axe said that he'd basically go and do it for some ridiculous fee. What was it? It was something like
£10.
$500,000 or something.
It was probably...
But you'd refuse to go and work at Microsoft. So you'd sell crack to kids.
Yeah.
You wouldn't go and work at Microsoft.
Sorry, I
said I'd eat a baby for
I can't choose where my principles are. That's where they are. I can't fix them.
Okay, next one.
New filthy gamble. New filthy
gamble. All right, hang on. How about the Microsoft thing? Let's pursue it. What about you?
Me?
Yeah.
You already work
1 year.
I'd go there for free. I'd pay their money to let me work there.
Is this
1 year?
No, that's cheap.
Is this work on no open source?
No open source.
Work entirely on.
I wouldn't do it.
You wouldn't do it. Full stop.
No.
£1 million.
You wouldn't
for
even
grit
your teeth for a year. You would. You see? That's why the gamble's filthy. Because you would.
I feel so filthy.
Yeah, but you see. for the next 10 years, you won't have to do anything.
Exactly. You could just retire and work in solely.
I'd go and do it for a year. I'd feel filthy.
How low would you go then?
I'd feel so filthy.
100,000?
What?
Would you do it for 100,000?
No, it'd need to be more than that.
250,000?
It'd need to be at least half a million.
At least half a million.
Yeah.
Higher than 200.
Lower than.
Just imagine though, seriously, if Microsoft headed notepaper landed on your doorstep on next month, on the Monday that we released this, and it said, Dear John or Bacon. I have heard you're great and you're ace. I'd love you to come and work at my reading campus for 100 grand. Love, Bill. Would you do it? Because imagine it's really sitting there in your hand.
Hang on, bear with me. Do I have to explain what a principal is?
You know, you explain it to me.
This is what
a quality moment. This is why we're discussing this.
Matt knows all about his principles because he's a marketing podcaster.
Aren't you?
Oh no, he's not a podcaster anymore because he's taking his pods off his website.
Oh fuck off!
Right, Matt. Microsoft want to employ you for a year.
Bear in mind,
you can't work on anything open source.
I'll pay them.
Bear in mind, my job has nothing to do with developing open source anyway.
No.
Okay, marketing.
I'm a web editor.
You've got to market Microsoft.
Or no. Not marketing.
That's your ideal job, isn't it, Mark?
No.
Really? Oh,
my ideal job is basically producing web content, and whether that be audio or text. But yeah.
Okay, so Microsoft.
So imagine I went and
filling in teletext pages.
Fuck you. If I had to give up Lug Radio, I wouldn't.
I love you
do
guys.
It for a lot.
Okay.
I mean, it would take a lot to
Hang
do.
Hang on, how much would we have to pay you to give up Lug Radio? Oh, I mean, how much would Microsoft have to pay to give up Lug Radio?
I'm not going to dignify
you. Should we forge an email?
Come on, Matt. Put money on it.
I'll remortgage me house and get a third of it, lads.
Half a million?
If it was for you, I'd go for 100 grand. I mean, 100 grand is a hell of a lot of money. And I've got debts to pay. I've got mortgage pay. I've got, you know, things that I want to do in my life. And if I could give myself a step up a bit for a year's work, just grit my teeth and doing, writing things like, hey, get your latest virus updates on the Microsoft website, then fuck yeah, but nobody's ever going to pay me 100 grand.
How is that writing web content? That seems a bit pants. Well, you ought to be writing decent web content.
What do you think web content?
So people like me, web monkeys like me, just end up doing stuff like, you know, for a company like Microsoft,
But you wouldn't actually feel that was improving Microsoft's share at the expense of open source. That wouldn't be any kind of betrayal for
All right,
you.
Okay.
Because you wouldn't actually be using your skills to their fullest extent to make Microsoft better.
All right, imagine then I was planning massive Microsoft marketing campaigns.
Yeah.
I can't put a figure on it, because I think it would...
Think of the experience it'd give you there.
I think that would be brilliant. It'd be brilliant for my CV, but it'd also make me feel hollow and shit inside.
So what's this price going to be then for making you feel hollow and shit?
How much money does it take to fill up the hollowness?
Yeah.
Come on, what's it going to be?
Quarter of a million.
Right.
Okay.
New filthy gamble, I've got one.
Okay.
The bald man didn't answer that, but he just go, whatever, I don't want to work at Microsoft.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a corporate whore. A quarter of a million, yeah, I'll be there.
Filthy gamble. Right, ready?
The gamble of filth.
The gamble of filth. Right, how much would you be paid to dress up in a kangaroo suit and murder Linus Torvalds?
I would never do that for any money at all.
So it's not only murder, but you're also murdering a really important guy.
Just murder of anyone, to me.
What's the kangaroo suit got to do with anything?
It's a disguise.
He's not a very good disguise.
He's in the outback.
Linus Torvalds murdered by kangaroo. Police baffled.
He's in the outback.
Police baffled.
No,
just wouldn't do it.
It's a filthy gamble. You've got to.
No, murder is completely off the cards.
No, I think there's got to be certain taboos. Here's my filthy gamble.
Hang on, bear with me. You wouldn't murder someone for any amount of money.
No, for no amount of money.
No, not at all.
So, Ak, you are saying like you would murder someone for
Well, to be honest with you, being an assassin sounds slightly romantic and cool. I'd have a shitload of money. it would matter who it was, but
so
not
Linus
purely
would
that it was
assassins
murder.
Assassins don't get to choose.
That's not how it works.
You do
there is a difference between
go and murder someone.
Hang on, we're not talking about me just putting an advert in a sweet shop saying assassin for hire. Someone has been offered me a specific amount of money for one contract.
You certainly would.
I can refuse that. I'm not like an assassin on a salary.
All right, if it was Bill Gates, how much would you do it for?
It wouldn't make any difference.
Right.
I don't think.
You would actually kill someone
Between Gates and Linus Torvalds. Well, yeah.
You make it sound like, well,
I'd kill, for instance, Jeffrey Dahmer for money.
Yeah.
No problem at all.
Before you knew what he was doing.
He's already dead, isn't he?
And, you see, that's the point. Then he'd just be... Is he?
No.
Well, choose your own at-liberty mass murderer. You know.
Jeffrey Dahmer's not at liberty, is he?
No.
Isn't he? Well, okay, kill him in prison then. Fine with me. I mean, you know, would you be the guy who threw the switch?
Never.
But that, because that would be murder. But I don't see what the problem would be with doing that.
The point I'm making though is, if you were to commit, if you were to commit a horrific crime,
that's not a bad point. I'll do the problem with it. The bit where I have to murder him.
If you were to commit a crime against somebody, would the fact that they're an open source person put you off?
No. Not
just go
not,
and kill
no,
them
no,
anyway.
Not just because of open source. If I had respect for them, yes.
Respect.
And I tend to have more respect
what about the fact
for open source developers than not open
what about
developers?
The fact that they're a fucking human being?
Good on you, Matthew.
Yes.
Jesus Christ, what are we talking about here? We're losing
not,
it.
Not all people who walk under the sun are the same. Not that, all human that, beings are the same. Would you have murdered...
Okay,
excuse me while I invoke Goldwyn's law for a second, but would you have murdered Hitler? He was a human being.
Absolutely.
Or do you think he was a demon in Schumann?
Hang on, did you say yes you would?
I'd quite...
But he was a human.
Once he'd proven that what he was capable, or if
still a human being,
if I could go back in time and prevent the murder of 6 million people plus all the other people who got murdered by
no,
by
that's
Hitler.
Not the question. We were saying if
and
could
right
you kill Hitler?
Well, no, because if I was wandering along and some bloke said, "Hi, I'm Adolf," then I could not possibly know who he was without hindsight. So no, I wouldn't just randomly murder some bloke called Adolf Hitler if he hadn't already proven himself to be one of the most wicked men who ever lived. That'd be ridiculous. Anyway, here's another film.
He might also be a new filthy gamble.
Imagine Mono took over the world, right? The Linux world. Yeah. How much would
not as opposed to stereo?
How much would you have to be paid? This is coming to you, Mono. How much would you have to be paid to kill Miguel de Garza and wear his skin to go into the Novell headquarters?
Like Face Off?
Yeah. No, like the size of a lamb. So you go to the Novell headquarters and undo the work of Mono.
It's the skin wearing
no money whatsoever.
Yeah.
Hang on, can I just, like, impersonate Miguel with a variety of false moustaches and glasses? I just have to kill him and wear his skin.
Well, not a variety. That'd be the right one.
It wouldn't be a filthy gamble.
He just have a fucking moustache. Yeah, but I'm not going to look particularly realistic if I try to squeeze into his skin. He's about fucking 9 stone lighter than me for a start. You go, fucking hell, Miguel, you're looking a bit fat today, and then there's going to be seam up the side of me belly, right? It's not going to be realistic, is it?
Ginger Barnett sticking out the top.
I think he's taller than I am.
Like those aliens in Doctor Who.
Listen, and now we'll go up and go, oh, hi, how are you doing, Miguel? And you'd be like,
good lord! I'm fucking fine! I'll be saying, oh, fucking Mono, I think we should just abandon the whole lot and concentrate on Python instead. Everybody go, well, Miguel, you're the boss, okay, delete the CVS repository.
Yeah, but the thing is,
how much?
That's not really filthy, because that's something that you'd do for nothing, isn't
so,
it?
So how much
yeah,
would the filth cost?
Wear someone else's skin.
Right, okay, yeah. How much would the filth cost? Right, filth. To wear Miguel's skin.
Do I have to do the skin thing?
Do you have to, yeah.
I don't
have to kill him as well?
That's where it's
you
filthy.
Can clean the skin first.
I don't think I'd kill a guy and wear his skin.
Wearing an Inspector Clouseau mask is not enough.
Out of a cracker.
Can I not wear one of them masks that they had in Mission Impossible?
Yeah, okay.
You know where Tom Cruise pulls off the mask? You know, he looked like Jim Phelps.
That's not real.
Yeah, but neither is the order. I'm going to kill Miguel and dress up in his skin.
But this is a filthy gamble. Keep a bit of realism.
Right, okay. I am not going to kill Miguel de Acosta and dress up in his skin.
I'm glad to hear it.
For any amount of money.
And to be honest with you, I don't think I'd want to... I would feel big reservations about tricking the Mono community out of Mono.
I don't mind killing someone and wearing their skin, but I wouldn't want to
trick the community.
Oh, no.
Shut up. I was quite clear about the fact that I wouldn't kill him and wear his skin. I wouldn't do that at all. I would feel reservations about tricking that, because I'd much rather explain my feelings, have them go, oh, okay, you're right then, and then abandon it because it's the right thing to do, rather than just because Miguel told them and he's the leader.
It'd be coincidental if you were wearing his skin.
Would you?
I'm not wearing all right. his fucking skin.
Would you kill him and not wear his skin?
No. He hasn't done anything. I don't agree with Mono, but I don't think he merits murder. Because Mono deserves to die just because he implemented .NET on Linux. I don't like it.
Right.
I don't dislike it that much.
That may provoke some discussion.
All of the source code for Mono was on one server, right? And you could go in and destroy all that data and just basically total Mono overnight.
Filthy gamble.
How much?
Filthy gamble.
Derail Mono just by destroying the server.
Oh, no. Fiverr. No. No,
that wouldn't be a monetary thing, because the money wouldn't make a great deal of difference.
The money would, or wouldn't
it? It would be, it wouldn't. It would be the ethical thing. It
so right. £5 million in well, a suitcase, see, would it make any difference?
I'm trying to work
would
out...
Would you do it for 50,000?
I don't know.
About it.
I'm seriously thinking.
You're
about
a bastard, you know. That.
I don't know.
You'd eat a baby for 20,000, so shut up.
that's never going to happen, is it? I mean,
well, that's only because you haven't got
20,000. I don't want to disappoint you here, but I think Novell have a distributed file system. They haven't got all the Mono code in the world.
No, but Neville
on mono.novell.org either.
And it's got don't turn off on it.
Yeah.
All right.
So, right.
Yeah, people, write in.
Write in with your suggestions for Filthy Gamble.
And we'll tell you how much we'd do it for.
And we'll, tell, you, we'll tell you how
Wiki
much
people,
how money we'd do
Wiki
it for.
People, set up a page on the wiki, because once again, we're too lazy.
Disclaimer, we would not kill, eat, dress up in their skin of anyone, right?
This is just
apart from the people
it's
who just
joke.
Said.
In fact,
Jono wouldn't eat a baby.
In fact, what would be quite interesting is to see how much Miguel would charge to kill himself, dress up in his own skin, and then...
Or to wear his skin and come and sabotage Lug Radio from inside.
Miguel is wearing his own skin, guys.
I was going to say, can you not just go, can I skip the kill myself station and just stick around in my own skin?
Yeah, nothing personal, by the way, Miguel.
It would be interesting to ask Miguel how much he'd abandon Mono for.
Yes. Should we ring some people up and ask them about the Filthy Gamble?
I think we should interview famous celebrities, famous Overtour celebrities, and ask them
how
the
much
Filthy Gamble questions.
Let's do it.
Cost to make you give up Python. Never use Python again.
Imagine you could use Ruby instead.
I'm allowed real proper alternatives, am I?
Yeah.
Not that much, then.
Right, okay. Cool, people, write in with your suggestions.
Send them in. And send in who you
want
us to ask. Keep sending them in. Send in who you want us to ask about the Filthy Gamble.
Ask us all.
Eh?
Ask us all.
And famous people.
No, I mean, ask famous people. Not us.
Yeah.
Nice one.
All right.
Oh, it's the end of yet another action-packed show.
It's been an action-packed show.
Full of controversy as ever.
If your mansion house needs haunting, it's called Rent-A-Ghost.
Excellent, that was brilliant.
No, keep going.
It was. They've got...
I knew that you knew the words.
And fools and...
Way down
deep in
the middle of the Rent-A-Ghost.
Where the Phantom of the Opera sings a haunting melody. No matter what you see, it's not a mystery, just... Rent-A-Ghost.
Bum, bum, bum. And there was another verse, which I can probably remember the words to too, but read some letters.
I'd rather you sneeze and popped off, please.
Thanks a fucking bunch.
He may be carry on.
Fantastic.
Because we got a jingle habit last time.
Yeah.
Can you imagine it? Rent-A-Ghost.
Is that supposed to be your Adam Sweet impression?
Rent-A-Ghost.
Was that your Adam impression?
Yes.
Ah. Because at least now we've heard your impression of Adam.
I did it on the night of Lug Radio Live.
At his face. Come on, let's go.
In front of everyone.
Read an email.
So let's talk about letters.
Emails. I had a nice email from Mike.
Mike who?
Thanks, Mike.
Well, it's either Mike A.
Mike
Soft.
Mike Stoked.
It's Mike at MikeASoft.com, which is quite cool. Anyway, he said...
Mr. Soft.
Mike A. Soft. Doesn't he live in Redmond?
He says, thanks for a great day at Lug Radio Live.
No problem.
Glad you liked it. And here is a link for the Hairless Aid. And it's over at www.
Is that like a ship spin-off of Lemonade?
cueballmusic.com/audio/bald/fortunefavorsthebald.wmv.
Visit the transcription
and
to
if you go
get
there,
the link.
The transcription?
Yeah, actually, we give it up on the wiki. We're just going to write all the things down on the side of a tram. Chase around.
Anyway, go there. You'll be able to hear a fantastic tune about how fortune favours the bell. Thanks very much for that, Mike. Format. Nice one.
Very nice. I've had an email from Bruno Tyndall. And he says, hi guys, huge new fan of the show, love the humour in the interviews, Distro Wars is hilarious.
Oh, good.
I think you meant to say Distro Wars was hilarious. Cause it's
no, I thought you meant to say Distro Wars was a bit bollocks.
He says, I've gone back and listened to about 8 of your shows so far, been listening at a rate of 1 a day for the last week. A few times I've been laughing so hard I almost crashed my fucking car. Like today on one of your shows, you were talking about the Dave Weiner number, and I literally swerved all over the road.
What was that again?
Too funny. Fucking hell.
The Dave Weiner number was how many times Dave Weiner had a go at you.
Oh, right.
He says, thanks again, keep up the good work, Bruno. And then he says, P.S. Gobshite is my
and your favourite word.
Is American? Bruno is very much like Jono there, except Jono doesn't need to be laughing hard at Lug Red in order to swerve all over the road and nearly kill himself. He just does it anyway.
Just before you carry on, when he says gobshot is his new favourite word, I'm not sure if we said this on the show, but apparently David Madeley in Australia and his group of friends, they all say bollocks a lot more often. Because of Lug Radio. So we're having an impact on
multicultural international effects.
Thank you. So everybody, say bollocks more often.
Bollocks more often. Yes. Right, I've got mail here from Christian Jones, who says, my name's Chris and I'm from Stafford, and I'm gutted I didn't find your show till after Lug Radio Live, and I'm listening to your archive shows at work, suffering from Lug Radio Syndrome. What he says, my question is, do you know of any similar shows in the UK where the open source community get together?
Similar to Lug Radio Live?
And the answer is no, that's why we set up Lug Radio Live, because all the other Linux expos are bollocks.
Yes, indeedy.
Yeah,
I'm not
going to
steal
later.
It. No, I'm not.
Because I've got one from Todd Wonky. Yes, that's right.
Does he have a donkey?
Don't laugh.
Wonky donkey.
Anyway, he did love the show before we mocked him. He's writing from Toronto, Canada. He says he's one of the lucky people who have a short commute, so he usually takes 3 trips to listen to an entire show.
Bloody
hell. So this will be back Thursday by the time I listen to this bit.
Lucky bastard.
He says, just wanting to comment on your do we need Samba for files. He says, I do often get the impression that there is a concept that Linux is playing catch up, but one story he'd be interested... Yeah, that's right, cats up. One story that he'd be interested in listening to would be where we talk to someone who's implemented one of the top 500 supercomputers that run Linux. He says, supercomputers are one area where Linux totally stomps all over Microsoft.
It is about the only area, to be fair.
Anyway, so, back to do we need Samba, apart from openness. I'd say, look at something like GPFS, which is IBM's General Parallel File System. So, nice one, thanks a lot for that. He says, keep up the good work, and thanks a lot.
What's his name?
Wonky.
But does that allow you to share files?
Wonky Donkey, thanks very much, Wonky Donkey.
It does, yeah.
You're sure on that one? Yeah. It's not just a file system, it's a shared file system.
Yeah.
Right, okay, fair enough. I'll look at
good
that.
Stuff.
Very sharing. Interesting.
It's massively parallel, he says.
I have an email from Chris Brown, otherwise known as the Snick Lifter.
Shirt Lifter.
Yeah. He should actually sign his email, the Shirt Lifter.
Nice.
Does he live in Browntown?
quite possibly.
Yeah, he's a brown clown in Browntown.
The plump and round brown underground. Sorry, carry on.
Finished?
Right, okay. Just about.
He said, dear Monkey Spankers.
Nice.
He is a brown clown.
He's
the same
with the Lug Radio vibe, isn't he?
He is.
I've just read this, and there's a big link, which hopefully Ack will do the tiny URL thing on.
Yep.
Yeah, nice one. And remembered your comments from the last show. It's a quality idea. As here he's talking about the bounty for Jono Edit.
Oh, right, yeah.
And he's basically talking about fundable.org.
Yeah.
And that's a site where you can go and pledge money towards something being...
Towards the National Lottery Thunderball game.
And also requests that people...
You can put in requests and you can also raise money there. And the idea is, if you don't get all the money together within X amount of time, everybody gets their money back. So yeah, it's quite a good idea.
Right. So if you're trying to organise, for instance, you know, a May ball for your college, then you can fund a ball.
Fund a ball.
Through fundable.org.
It's weird, isn't it, how that hit Slashdot shortly after we did the show?
It is weird.
It's completely unconnected. They didn't mention it in
a great resource.
It is.
For people who want to put it.
It's fantastic, yeah.
So if you want to behind it.
Get a fundable.
Is it my society?
Camelot.
I think it might be a My Society thing. Like, write to them. And Pledge Bank. And a few things like that.
Yep.
Squid Nose.
The difference with this one is everyone gets their money back
and
if it fails.
Absolutely. I think it's a great idea because it's basically a risk-free way of trying to accumulate money.
Yeah, absolutely. Lovely,
which is great. I've got one here for...
No, you don't.
Okay.
You've skipped the routine.
It's called clockwise.
I didn't know there was a routine. I just thought we got to ignore John.
Bastard. Email from someone called Christian Clare. Christian Clare saying...
Chris Eclair?
Christian Clare.
Ah.
Isla St. Clair.
Anyway, hi guys, love the show, it's good. Can we have a photo of the microphones?
This is an old
I think
email.
He means
and,
your new microphone,
and,
doesn't
and,
he?
And what sort do you use? Plug expected but wanted. Banter good, arguments good, jokes bad but good. So,
what do you want to photograph of the microphones for?
So, the microphones, if you want to know, maybe are Audio Technica drum mics, apart from mine, which is a Sennheiser mic.
Made out of gold.
Which is why everyone can hear Jono so much better than the rest of us.
They can't, though. I've deliberately made mine.
Why is it that whenever I listen back to the show, you're always talking like an old person? We always sound like...
That's EastEnders, mate.
You all sound like EastEnders. So, yeah, thanks very much, Christian Clare.
Are we going to provide a photograph of the mics?
Are we, fuck?
You can take a photo and stick it on your gallery.
I'll stick a photo on for Christian.
Yeah, okay. I've got a mail here from Casimir Ken, who's a mining engineer.
Wow.
Which is pretty cool.
Where from? Like the northeast of England?
From Sierra Leone. Apparently, 4 years ago, he was abducted by some rebels and forced to mine under their commands.
I think he's lying, isn't he?
But because he's the head of the mining crew, he knows the whole secrets of the field, so he made away with 550 kilos of gold through a local fishing boat to the neighbouring country, Ghana. Now, the gold's in Ghana, and he's just asking us for a little bit of money so we can help him collect that gold.
That's an amazing story. Yeah, so where do I send my money to?
When he hears from us, he'll furnish us with every other detail we need to know about this transaction, and please feel free to ask me any question concerning the transaction.
What's his email address, Ash?
Casimir_Ken@yahoo.co.uk.
Yahoo.co.uk.
I thought he was from Sierra Leone.
Yeah. Oh, well,
I'm sure it'll be fine.
You think it'd be yahoo.co.sierra fucking Leone, wouldn't you? But no.
is there a phone number?
Wow.
Disappointingly, no, there isn't.
Thanks for the email.
It's every day you get offers like that, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, because... I must confess, if I knew where 550 kilograms of gold was, I'd mail people about it. Much. Shut up.
Steve Wetzel. Oh, we mentioned him last time, but thanks again,
Steve
Wetzel.
He likes pretzels.
For your donation, £10. Thanks a lot.
Oh, thank you.
We've had an email from Chris McGee. With the...
Related to Debbie McGee?
Or Len McGee.
The lovely Debbie McGee.
Not so lovely
these
days.
She's gorgeous.
That's her official first name.
No.
The lovely.
She is lovely. I have a thing about
her. She's ancient.
I have a thing about Debbie McGee.
Not a lot.
No, to be honest, Debbie McGee and...
she looks nice
Felicity
next to her
Kendall.
Husband.
Felicity Kendall, yes. Absolutely.
Debbie, yes.
Felicity Kendall 20 years ago.
She's delicious. No,
no, now.
Felicity Kendall now is really good. Felicity Kendall 20 years ago was stunning.
She was. Now she's
now she's good and she's knocking on 60.
She's a bit of a gilf, you know.
Right.
Bit of a bilf.
Bilf.
Bill, I'd like to.
To befriend.
Befriend. Bill friend. Bill, I'd like to bill friend.
Anyway.
If I could convince you to rename
Alan. So McGee has written to us with the subject line of Eclipse in his... Rin is a mammoth email, but he basically says...
Is it hairy?
He really enjoys the show.
It's got two big tusks.
And it keeps him informed while providing him a bit of levity while working. Nice word.
Wow.
So he floats when he listens to the show.
Float off the ground.
So, basically...
Levitation.
He says a lot.
That's confused, though.
Levitation, that's what you need if you want to be the best. I'll tell you what, right? Roy Castle, this is important, this. You know when he blows a fucking high C on his trumpet, yeah?
No, because he's dead.
No, when he used to, you know, right, trumpet player. When he blew a high C on that trumpet, you couldn't get a credit card between the cheeks of his arse.
Thanks for
truth.
That.
Anyway.
And how do you know this? What were you doing with a credit card and round the back of Mr. Castle?
So is it a case of hiring Roy Castle, £200?
Anyway.
Buying a trumpet, £10.
I've heard.
Trying to stick a MasterCard
up his arse. Priceless.
I hear that Roy Castle takes chicken pin now anyway.
Right, so, anyway,
how many more emails
he says that on a, I just read out his name before, I didn't get around to reading out the email. He says that on a 1 GHz Athlon 256 megabyte system, it took 20 to 30 seconds to load Eclipse, using Kafka VM, but yeah, eventually it was nice and quick, and that basically, he says that as part of Fedora Core 4, they're using GCJ, and there's a lot of good work going on Java GNOME, and basically lots of nice things are happening with Glade and Java, and that's his 2 cents worth. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks.
Excellent.
Nice one.
Thank you very much for that.
Excellent.
Yes.
I had a quick email from our friends over at the Linux Link Tech Show. Basically,
Yep.
And
what did they say?
Hi, fellas. Heard about the explosions and the terror attacks over there.
Terrible, isn't it?
And while I know you guys don't live in London, just wanted to say that sincerely hope that you and your families are okay. If there's anything I can do, please let me know.
That's really nice.
I thought that was really nice.
Thanks very much, guys.
Cheers, guys. We're all safe. Thanks very much.
It is terrible. I mean, luckily, has anyone been affected by the terrorist attack?
No,
not personally.
I mean, Birmingham got evacuated.
Yeah.
That was pretty scary.
Our building was
very close to us.
Really?
Yeah, very close to...
Well, Jono works on Broad Street, which is the street they're evacuating. Aid basically works on Broad Street.
Well, they evacuated our building, yeah.
Yeah, my office is about 100 yards away from that, and it was in the area which was evacuated.
So just to clear up, this is in Birmingham, not in London. This is the second incident.
One of the things I found, I mentioned this on my weblog, but not everyone who listens to the show reads my weblog.
Really?
It was really cool that, you know, you knew something had happened and everyone was watching it on the BBC website. And I knew all my mates in London were all right. Because we'd all basically emailed around, and email was still working. So, you know, I mailed my mate Tim down in London and said, "How's everything going? Is everyone in there?" And he mailed me back and said, "Yeah, everyone in the danger zone has checked in."
Fantastic.
Despite the fact that all organised. You know, landlines were all down, and you got the
cell phones are down.
Cell phones were all down in central London, but email just kept on working. You think, yeah. The next attack, that's what it was built for.
I tell you, it's
great that it does so. And the fact that there's this constant communication facility there.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, it would have been a fucking nightmare 10 years ago. You'd spend the whole time thinking, God, what if my mates all right? Desperately trying to ring up. Yeah.
I tell you, what was slightly harrowing there that I've noticed about this is that, I mean, that's fantastic. That's a fantastic use of technology.
Are you going to talk about the videos on the phones?
Just the videos on the phones and people's photos that they've taken with their phones. Yeah. It's really awful seeing that. Because you're seeing it from their perspective. I mean, it's...
The media tend to hide us away from all the dismemberment and stuff like that, whereas American media wouldn't. They would show you, arms everywhere.
I don't know about that. The American news networks are very heavily censored, mate.
Really?
Americans, send us in your thoughts on this.
Anyway, my last thought on that, I know it's completely off topic, but one thing that I've been a little bit... This is Matthew's last thought. One thing I've been a little bit disappointed with all of that is that basically a lot of bloggers seem to have rather callously jumped on the bandwagon and said, "Oh, this is an amazing event for blogging because it shows how powerful blogging." Look,
yeah, brilliant.
You just twats in a bedroom writing shit that nobody wants to read. Yeah.
Now, fuck off. You see, there, I'm not 100% sure I agree with.
There are some good blogs, but the majority of blogs are shit.
Just the fact that you're writing a weblog doesn't necessarily make.
Did you say the majority of blogs are shit?
Well, by the law of averages, yes.
No, that would mean that half the blogs were shit.
No, sorry, alright. But seriously, going back to my point, I've just read some rather callous things on some blogs where people are saying, "Oh, it's amazing that this event has been brilliant to show the power of blogs." No, mate, people die, just fucking get it together.
Yeah, but a lot of blogging fans will use any fucking excuse to mention blogs,
That's my point, really.
You know, so I have got an email from Matthew Smith. He says, love your show, good mix of info and fun, the interviews kick ass.
Nice.
Anyway, I installed Ubuntu back in November and then went to Ubuntu.
We just brainwash people to Ubuntu, don't we?
Yeah. He says, he says, after hearing you guys vouch for GNOME time after time, I decided to give it another go around. Now everything appears to be working and I'm having a blast with it. I've installed all KD stuff and I'm running straight GNOME now with the exception of K3B. So he seems to love it. Matt Smith in San Diego, another place. Which is excellent. always grand.
That's where the Linux picnic is going to be soon. So check out Google for that.
So
Matt, I can't remember the domain name of hell. Do we have you know the fact?
I propose a winner for the photo competition.
Yep. That's okay. A good idea. We've got a couple of entries, didn't we?
We did get a few entries sent through.
Not too many, but we did have some.
Yes. Best
photo of Blog Radio Live, yeah.
Taken at Blog Radio Live, not just on the day.
No, we've come down to a couple, haven't we, I think?
Yeah. And the winner from our discussions, we think, can we have a drum roll? The winner of the Lug Radio photo competition is Russ of Russ and Jen fame.
Nice.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Well done, Russ.
Thank you very much, Russ.
What do they win?
They're going to win a Make Magazine subscription.
Nice. That's magazine.com.
And I'll stick it on. We'll stick it on the website.
So what was the photo of?
It's of you looking very short next to me.
That's worthy of
looking considerably taller than Yao.
I'm considerably taller than Yao.
So,
nice one.
I think we're pretty much
the end of another show.
Pretty much wrapped up. So, it's been great fun. It's been fucking boiling in here.
It's boiling.
How many shows before the end of the season?
Two or three.
We're thinking two or three.
Yeah. Two or three.
We've got some good interviews coming up. A couple of very exciting ones.
We have. We have got some very good interviews coming up.
Should we keep shtum?
We shall keep shtum.
Yeah. Keep it tuned.
And, of course, send us in your emails with anything you've heard in the show. Keep us informed what you think. And
spread the Lug Radio word, guys. Thanks
a lot.
Spread the Lug Radio wide. Fuck off. I don't want to be spread wide.
You're already wide.
You're spread quite wide enough already.
Thanks, guys.
Take it easy, guys. Bye.
All right.
Bye.